We're continuing on with a series of sermons that all come from what we call the Sermon on the Mount, which begins with the Beatitudes, which hopefully by now are getting to be familiar to many of you. I invite you to test yourself and see, even if all we've had displayed are the first half of each Beatitude. So I just didn't, like, as you get distracted and things like that, just think if you can figure out what the second half of each of those are. I'm hoping by March 2nd, which is the last week of our Sermon on the Mount series, that you'll be able to recognize most of them. Maybe even say what some of them are if somebody was to ask you on the sidewalk or something like that. Hey, what are the Beatitudes? Oh, blessed are. Maybe you'll be able to say more than that. Because we're going to hear them. We keep hearing them every single Sunday. So there's the Beatitudes, and those are foundational to the Sermon on the Mount. Everything else that we read in the Sermon on the Mount comes back to that basic foundation. Last week, after the Beatitudes, we read about how Jesus identified who we are, that as his followers, as his disciples, we are two things. We are salt in the world, and we are light in the world. And there was a whole lot of conversation about who we are. And that takes us to the place where the rest of the sermon, Jesus says, okay, well, given who you are, what does that mean for how you live? And this is where we get into some challenges sometimes. Because what Jesus was doing in this is he had a simple formula that he was following, and it was all about challenging the legalism of his Jewish audience. And the danger for us Christians is that we can go, oh yeah, those first century Jews, they were all legalistic, they didn't get it. Well, I'm going to challenge us that by the time we get to the end of things today, that maybe we can confront one or two of our own legalisms. You see, the reality is that legalistic thinking is way easier than what Jesus asked us to do. And so I'm going to leave that to kind of, and we're going to come back to it, because Jesus starts this whole section and he starts talking about how he didn't come to abolish the law, that the whole Jewish religion was based upon. But he says these words to his audience. He says in verse 20 of Matthew 5, "For I tell you, unless your righteousness," and he's just talking to the average person in the crowd around him, "unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Now, here's something we have to understand about the scribes and Pharisees. They were the guys, and they were guys, who you would stand back and you would go, oh, they're the saints. They're the holy ones. Where we're supposed to fast one day a week, they fast twice a week. Where we're not supposed to do any work on the Sabbath, they take it much further than that. Where we're supposed to tithe 10%, they tithe 15%. They are the holy ones. They are the ones who are precious in God's sight because they follow the law better than you or I ever could. Their whole life is about following the rules of God that he laid down right from the time of Moses. Their whole life is about that. Not mine. I'm just an average citizen of Israel. And Jesus says, hey, you average citizens of Israel, your righteousness has to exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. Now, I wonder how many people decided to get up and go home at that point. Jesus was setting up an impossible standard. He's saying, okay, I know you've got these guys and they're on this pedestal because they are so righteous, which means holy or right or godly. They've got it all together. And you have to get it more together than them. You have to exceed them. Now, for those who stayed, who didn't just give up, hang their heads and walk home, for those who stayed, he unpacks that. And this week and next week, we look at six different examples that he gives of where the Pharisees are getting it wrong and where he's trying to help them understand so that they can get it right. Where he can unpack that statement, what does it mean for your righteousness to exceed the most righteous people in our whole nation that we can think of? That's the question that they're asking. And so this is all about righteousness. Now, again, a little qualifier. These six different things are illustrations. They're examples of Jesus' point. What we have done often in 21st century Christianity is we've took these six things and we've turned them into about 12 more laws that we have to follow. And let's just think really carefully as we go through this of these as illustrations and what some parallel examples might be as we go through them. Because Jesus followed a really simple formula. He said to them, "You have heard that it was said." And then he states what they heard that it was said. And then he answers that, "But I say to you," and there's something else. And each illustration goes the same way. "You have heard that it was said, but I say to you." Now, in the "you have heard that it was said," what he's talking about is the tradition that had built up around the law. So the law or the rules of Judaism, the ones we're most familiar with, the Ten Commandments. Moses went up the mountain and came down with the Ten Commandments. And we think of those are the rules. Well, over the centuries of being Jewish, people had unpacked those, had talked about them, had qualified them. So, okay, the rule is, thou shalt not murder. Okay, well, what if we're commanded to go to war and kill a whole bunch of people? Does that classify as murder? Is that contrary to it? And so then you have rabbis who will write on that and say, well, you know, that doesn't. That's just about killing for God versus murder. And then it would say, well, what if somebody breaks into your house? Are you allowed to pull out your shotgun and shoot them then? And, well, is self-defense murder? Is that against it? So over the centuries, all sorts of teaching and tradition had built up to try and explain and understand what God said to begin with. And so it's the tradition that Jesus is challenging and saying, essentially, you've heard that it was said, here's the tradition that you've been taught, but you're off a little bit, is kind of his point on each of them. And the first one that he starts with is, you have heard that it was said, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. Now, what they've done in the tradition is they've actually taken two completely separate pieces of scripture and they've put them together. So they've turned one of the Ten Commandments, which is part of the moral code of conduct, killing is bad, and they've added it to part of the civil laws of the people, which say, here are the punishments that will come your way from the courts if you should kill someone. And so they've turned murder into simply a civil matter as opposed to part of the ethical and moral matters. And what they've done is they've said, what really matters is what you do. So earlier this week, I get really angry at somebody. And in my head, I think, you know, it would be nothing for me to just speed up a little bit and drive over them in my car. Now, I know I'm alone in these thoughts. Or, you know, their head wouldn't withstand a good knock into that cement wall. You know, those thoughts that get into our head when we get angry or frustrated or we just can't contain it. And then we go, but it's okay because I didn't drive over them. And I didn't bash their head. So therefore, I'm still righteous and holy. And Jesus says, you said don't murder. But I'm here to tell you, it's not about what you do. It's about the stuff going on inside of you. It's about the anger. But I say to you, even if you're angry at someone. I couldn't resist that picture. Sorry. But haven't we all felt that, right? Even if you're angry at someone, even if you call someone a name, even if you, one of the versions of scripture, I think it might be the New Living Translation, even if you say to your brother or sister, you're an idiot, right? That is the same as if you had killed or murdered somebody. Because it's not about the act of murder or the act of killing. It's about what is going inside of you that results in the murder or the killing. And Jesus is saying, real righteousness is about getting what's going on inside of you right, not just about the actions on the outside. The second one, he says, you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. Okay? This is where it gets tricky. I'll just look at the pulpit while I preach this. The next one gets worse. But I say to you, right? I say to you, again, it's not just about what you do. It's where do those actions come from? And Jesus says, I say to you, if you even look at a woman with lust, you've as much as committed adultery. I say to you that as soon as you look at another person as if they're just an object to satisfy your wants and desires, you've as much as committed adultery. As soon as you start to fantasize about somebody other than the person that you've committed your life to, you've committed adultery. What is this about? This is about Jesus saying, righteousness lives in your heart, not in your actions. Your heart flows out into your actions. You might say, I've been faithful to my husband, or I've been faithful to my wife for the 30 years we've been married. And Jesus would say, just outwardly or inwardly too? Because righteousness comes from the heart. And then he says, and I didn't have them read this because I thought this one you need to talk about as soon as you read it. He says, you have heard that it was said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, okay, now let's back up and let's see what's behind this legalistic law. So in the beginning, divorce wasn't supposed to be what was going to happen. Men and women would become one. Marriage was about going from two to becoming one unit, right? And when you become one, to split apart is a breaking of a whole. It's not a going back to the way things were. It's a breaking apart. Now, the reality is that sin infects us all, and it infects our relationships. And so sometimes marriages don't work. And as long back as before Moses, sometimes marriages didn't work. But there was a thing going on in Moses' time and in the first century that isn't as much the case as it is in this day and age, in this part of the world. And that was that particularly for women, women didn't have jobs, women didn't have income, women didn't inherit from their parents. Women were completely and totally dependent on the men in their lives to keep them from being in poverty, from keeping them from living on the streets, or keeping them from going hungry or starving. It was either your father or your husband or your sons who were responsible for you as, or your brother, who were responsible for you as a woman in society. And what you had was you would have, and this is why this one comes across as being all about the men and not about the women, but we'll get to that in a second. What was happening was you had men who were divorcing their wives and leaving them with nothing, leaving them destitute, sometimes their wives and their children, for whatever reason they felt like. And so Moses said, okay, you are allowed to divorce for only this reason. You're only allowed to divorce if she is unfaithful to you. Then you're allowed to divorce. But to do so, you have to give her a certificate of divorce. Because what was happening was men were leaving their wives for whatever reason. They were leaving their wives. And she had nothing on paper to show that she was divorced. So she could not get into another relationship. She couldn't do anything without being accused for adultery. And the problem with that was that the punishment for adultery was being stoned to death. So women were just kind of out of luck, whatever way you looked at it. If her husband says, oh, you know what, you've had a few kids, I'm going on to a newer model, then she's out of luck. She, you know, hopefully one of those kids is a boy and he grows up, he gets a good job and he can take care of her. But God forbid they're all girls, or God forgive they're still babies. She has nobody left to take care of her. With the certificate of the divorce, Moses is saying, okay, now at least, here's the proof, here's the allowance that she may marry again. But here's what had happened. Fast forward a few centuries, more than a few centuries, to Jesus' day, and this is what you've got going on, because this is what we do. Every time we have a law that's meant to enhance justice, we find a way around the justice part of it and just focus on the law part of it. So here's what was happening. You have all of these, again, men, and this isn't a man-bashing thing, because we'll get to that. But you have all these men who are walking out on their wives for lots of reasons, but they're going, but it's okay, I gave her a certificate of divorce. It's okay, I don't have any other responsibilities. I gave her a certificate of divorce. Yeah, I know she's sitting on the park bench because she has nowhere to live tonight. But that's her own fault. She has a certificate of divorce. Why hasn't she gone out and found another man? So Jesus is saying, you've heard that it said, it's okay to divorce your wife as long as you give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, no, it's not. I say to you, what are the actual words here? But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Now, here's where our legalism steps in. We say, or I could say, you have heard that it was said, that divorce, thou shalt not divorce, and thou shalt not remarry should you be divorced. You have heard it said. So what does Jesus say to that? That's when we have to look and we say, what was Jesus actually saying here? Was he actually saying divorce is not okay? Yes, he was. That's not God's intent. Ever is it God's intent. But we all know, and Jesus wasn't an idiot, he knew as well that sometimes marriages fall apart. Sometimes things happen and the marriage ends. And he's saying, but you better be darn sure that your heart is right. Because all the things that surround divorce are heart issues. And I'm here to tell you that it's not the divorce, it's not the action, it's what's going on in your heart. It's the fact that you can think you can just throw away another person. It's the fact that you think, well, you know, I don't like them anymore, so that's enough. It leads into the next one, which is about swearing and making oaths before God that we're going to get to. And you see, this is not, I was going to skip over this altogether because A, I'm not married. And so what do I know about how hard marriage is? Well, let me tell you, I talk to you. I get that marriage is really hard. And I also get that some of you had to be divorced. I also get that sometimes marriages are not even safe places. Never mind, not just good places. Sometimes they're not even safe places. But I do worry that we're too quick to go there. That we're too quick to say, we don't love each other anymore. Let's call it quits. Marriage is really, 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 really hard. Some of you have been married for a long time. And for some of you, the only reason you've been married for a long time is simply because you've said divorce is not an option for us. And you've been forced to work through really hard stuff. And some of you, no amount of working through it is able to end it. Marriage is covenant, right? Marriage is standing up. When you have your marriage ceremony, think back. Some of you, I know this is going to test your memory, but think back to the times when you stood before God and family and friends and you made vows to each other, right? That's a big deal. We don't just throw that away. But sometimes divorce happens. And Jesus is saying, you don't just get to throw away your marriage and say, I'm all good because I wrote a certificate of divorce. It has to be hard. It has to be challenging. It can't be easy because you're splitting apart something that is one. Again, the question is, what's the heart issue? Because where righteousness lives is in the heart, not in the actions, which also challenges, can we feel real good about ourselves? Well, we've managed to stay married for 40 years. We're super righteous. What if your marriage is filled with name-calling and mistrust and dislike and hatred of each other, right? Is it righteous just to stay married because you're not supposed to get divorced? Or do you look at what's in the heart issues? And here, and this is an aside, but I think it's really important to go here. The Apostle Paul said that there's nobody who's righteous, no, not even one of us, and that's the truth. The truth is, none of us are Jesus Christ, and none of us are unaffected by the realities of this human condition which we call sin. None of us are free of that. It affects us individually, it affects our families, it affects our institutions. Sin is just the reality. And the extraordinary thing is not, well, with the Spirit in your life, you can be righteous. your marriage can last forever if you just hold on to the Spirit of God in it. No, the extraordinary thing is when it all falls apart, when the marriage, when there's no rescuing the marriage, when you find yourself in a pit so deep, there's no way that you can climb out of it. Whatever it is that the reality of sin has infected in your life and caused to bring ruin and destruction, here's the good news of that, is that Jesus Christ brings forgiveness and grace into that. That's the extraordinary thing. The number of people I've met who, yeah, their marriages fell apart completely. There was no rescuing of those marriages. But they learn, they do the self-examination, they fall in love again, they get married again, and they have end up with this beautiful, God-honoring relationship. God is a God of redemption and a God of grace. And that's where the Pharisees got it wrong, and that's where too often we do as well, when we quote Scripture and we just say, well, thou shalt not get divorced. You have heard it said. And if thou shalt get divorced, thou shalt not remarry. That's it. And Jesus says, wait a second. Let's talk about the heart. Let's talk about the internal motivations of it. Let's talk about what's going on that causes the destruction and the downfall of marriages to begin with. Because that's where the roots of righteousness are. I feel like I need to pause there. And actually, what I feel like I need to do, If anybody needs to respond to that, I'm going to let you say something or storm out or yell at me. I don't know what you want to do. I mean, Jesus could have said, except I don't think there was many single adults around. He could have said to the single adults, you know, thou shalt remain celibate for the rest of your life as long as you're single. But I say to you, right? But he talked about marriage because everybody was married. And then he goes to the next place, which kind of follows from the divorce place. And he says something that sounds really strange to us. You have heard that it was said, you shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord. In other words, when you put your hand on the Bible and you say, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God, wherever you are. Or you say, I swear this is true when you're telling a story about something. Or whenever you make those kind of statements, what you're saying is, right now, what I'm about to tell you, oh, so true that I will put my hand on the Bible and swear to it. Well, let me ask you what that tells you about all the other times you tell people stuff. Like, this time, I'm going to tell you the truth. But yesterday, none of that was the truth. This is about the commandment, thou shalt not lie. Because people were saying, okay, you got to swear. And so they were swearing about everything to the point where those oaths didn't actually mean anything. I swear to you that I had a sandwich for lunch yesterday. Who cares? You know, right? And so we've said some things are really important to tell the truth and some things don't matter to tell the truth. But in fact, what Jesus is saying, but I say to you, don't swear at all. If the swearing doesn't mean anything, everything should be true. You shouldn't be lying ever. People should be able to just trust your word that, hey, you know what? That person over there, they opened their mouth and it's truth that comes out. Again, he's saying, just because you put your hand on the Bible and swore it to be true, that doesn't make you righteous. Righteousness comes from the heart. Are you a truthful and honest person? And the reason I said this ties into what we just talked about with divorce. Okay, so here we go. We have a wedding. We're looking forward to, Darren's not here today, but in June, hopefully, Darren's going to be getting married. And we love Darren and we're so happy for him. And he and Andrea are going to stand up front and they're going to stand before family and friends, their church family. They're going to stand before God and they are going to make vows. They are going to stand there and say, this is what my life with you, to the best of my ability, is going to look like. I'm going to honor you. I'm going to respect you. I'm going to be faithful to you. And whatever gets thrown in there, this is what our life is going to look like together. Well, should those vows mean anything more because they said it in that ritual, in that ceremony, in that environment, than if on their 10th anniversary, They're sitting on a deck somewhere at a cottage, and they say, I love you and I'm going to honor you the rest of my life. And it's just the two of them and the stars. Should it mean anything more or anything less? No. Because it's not the swearing, it's what's in the heart that makes us righteous. The fourth beatitude is, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. That starts in ourselves. Do we hunger and thirst to be righteous, to be holy, to be godly in our own hearts? And the promise is, why are they blessed? Because they will be filled. Because all of these things, righteousness in general, we can't do on our own. That's where the Spirit of God comes in and makes us righteous, and makes us truth tellers, and makes us faithful, and makes us look on other people with dignity, and makes us peacemakers instead of angry people. It's the Spirit of God that comes in and does those things. And so those four, next week we're going to get to the other two illustrations, but those are four illustrations that Jesus brought up to say, you need to be even more righteous than the scribes and the Pharisees, and here's how you're going to do it. You're going to stop looking at the outward, and you're going to look at the inward. So I was thinking all week about, okay, what are some modern day things that we might get called on? And I'm going to encourage you to go home and to think about these things. See if around your dinner tables or whatever, you can come up with even one thing that might apply today and that might apply to you and your family specifically. You have heard it said, here's one, you have heard it said, thou shalt tithe. Now, whether we do or not, we're not going to go there, but you have heard it said, thou shalt tithe. Thou shalt give 10% of your income into the offering plate. Sounds good, doesn't it? That's what most who've grown up in the church have absorbed or been taught or come across at some point in time. But I say to you, 100% belongs to God, not just 10%. And again, I'm not as good with words as Jesus was, but if you're looking and you're saying 10% of what I have belongs to God, the rest is mine to do with as I please, we're missing the point. You can say, I could feel, look at how righteous I am, because 10% of my income goes in the offering plate. Yeah, well, what do you do with the rest of it? Does it honor God? Because frankly, it's all his to begin with. And then I thought, you have heard that it was said on the same note, what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God? Yeah, that the Bible says. And it says it because, this was in the Old Testament, because all the religious, righteous people were doing really good at giving their sacrifices, at putting their 10% in the plates, and they were ignoring justice and kindness and humility altogether. And so what have we done? We've said, yeah, those self-righteous Pharisees and scribes, aren't we glad that we're not like them? And we say, we do justice and we love kindness and we walk humbly with God, and you know what? We don't have to give any money because we do all that stuff. And the Bible says we don't have to give any money because we do all of that stuff. See how we turn it all around? Everything that's always meant for justice, we turn on its head so that we can make it legalistic, so that it's easier, because legalism is easier. You have heard it said that thou shalt dress up for church. I'm not sure many people in this church have heard that out was said, but, you know, 20 years ago, you have heard that it was said, thou shalt dress up for church. Thou shalt wear a suit and tie to church. Thou shalt wear a dress to church if you're a woman. You have heard it was said, but I say to you, and I don't know what words Jesus would use, but I think how many of us dress up or used to dress up, go to church and say, I'm righteous. Look at how I'm dressed. I'm following the rules. But what's the shape of our heart when we come to a place to worship? What's going on inside? Are we here to honor God? You know, I get that the reason that we used to dress up to go to church was to show honor to God. That how we dress communicates what we think about the people that we're with. And one of the things is, how do we feel about the God that we come to worship? And less in this day and age, but in a day and age not so recently, you dressed up to come into God's presence. But it didn't always reflect what was going on in the heart. And Jesus is always more concerned with the heart than the actions. Always about the heart. And that's how we are more righteous than the scribes or Pharisees. If our hearts are righteous, not just our actions. These are hard words for us to hear. Just why, please don't leave them here. But go home and think about where you might trip up on the traditions of the church versus the underlying meaning behind those traditions.